Welcome to the G&JB Show, episode number 13. It's been a tough week for me personally with a knee reconstruction. How you been, Jacko?
I've been good, mate.
Good, mate. You recently got back from Thailand. How was the trip over there?
Yeah, it was pretty good. We touched on it the other week. Pretty glad to be back in my own gym for the last couple of weeks and seeing family and friends. And yeah, just back
off to Russia.
Then off to Canberra this weekend, and then I'll get back and we'll go to Russia and hopefully do well at the odds. Yeah.
And today on the podcast, we've got one of Australia's favourite sons. He's everybody's best mate. He's the biggest goose in any gym he's ever been to. Brad the Pocket Rocket Hall. How's things, Bradley?
G'day, boys. How are we?
Good, mate. Good to have you on.
Mate, it's about time, mate. I can't believe I'm episode 13.
I know, what's doing?
Mate.
Just been saving it. Yeah,
just saving it. Just getting
the story. Yeah. But when we talk about boxing and careers, and we're going to touch on a few different things in your life. But, mate, how many fights did you have all up?
214.
Looked like he had every one, too, just quietly. But here we go. We started. So, mate, I just want to know, let's tell us, I know a little bit, but let us know a little bit about your, you know, where you were born, your childhood, and then I suppose how you got into boxing, who you trained with, and, you know, then we'll fill in the gaps from there.
Yeah, mate. So I started off when I was 10 down in Sydney. So I was
You're blue, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm a
fucking
blue
asshole.
So, born in Blacktown and then grew up out west. There, and then I first went into a boxing gym at Parramatta at the PCYC there, and then that's how that all just started. Dad took me in to build up my confidence because I was playing footy and I was just a human speed up, really. So I was either taekwondo, karate, or boxing, and just picked boxing and just went from there. So my first coach was Ross Willis. And PCYCs were very big back then.
Yeah,
it was always packed, and police officer always hanging around the gym, and usually them police officers back in the day used to be like Parramatta players or Penrith players.
Yeah, nice.
Like that. So that's how where that all started, and went on from there, really.
Mate, I use you as an example when I'm speaking to the kids. Losing your first 9 fights. And then I believe you've told me your third win was an Australian title and it was like your 18th fight or something like that or something. And then to have such a tremendous career, go on to 2 Olympic Games, and you actually boxed, you were part of the team for 2000 in our own country, 2 Commonwealth Games.
Two
Olympics, 2 Commonwealth Games. How many world championships?
2 of them.
2 world champions, and obviously many competitions all over the world. Mate, I use that example because when I'm talking to kids, like, never give up, you know, when they struggle, they've lost a couple on the bounce or they lose 4 or 5 on the row. It's like, you know what? It's not the end of the world. And I always give them you as an example. Kids that are struggling at schools with different things, I say, hey, you know, the world, one of my mates, this is how his life. And most people would have probably quit after, 5, 6 losses in a row. And Brad kept going, and now no one even gives a fuck. It's like we look at you as an Olympian, not as the guy that lost his first 9 fights. How was that sort of what kept you going? Or you didn't even really care. You just kept going because you enjoyed it. What was the go?
No, Dad just took me there. And my first coach, he sort of always knew that I wasn't too far off from getting them. And then, as a sub-junior back then, or a junior, he always used to say to me, it doesn't matter until you're senior. Nothing's going to matter until you're senior, until you have them big senior fights. And then things will happen from there. That's when you get selected. That's when people start noticing you. So, I think my first Australian title, I was 3 wins, 14 losses.
Yeah.
And that was my first Aussie title, and I won that. And
it's fair to say you would have gone in as an underdog with a record like that, wouldn't you?
Terrible record. And they didn't want to send us down there either.
Oh, didn't they?
Arthur Tunsil said, no, I'm not taking him. And then my coach said, no, he'll win gold. So, and then when I even started at the age of 10, my first boxing coach said that I'll make the first Commonwealth Games in 2002. So that was when I was 10 years old.
Yeah, right.
I don't know why, and or anything. Yeah, and I beat him, and I went to the Sydney Olympics before that. Yeah. So I don't know.
So 2002 was Manchester Games, yep. Wasn't it? That was a successful one for Australia. We had 3 golds, didn't we, in that one?
Yeah, 3 golds.
Daniel Gill.
A bronze would have been.
Paul Miller, Benny. Justin Kane.
Yeah.
And Benny McEachran.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice. Well, Jacko, your career at the start look wasn't you did. I know you started off with a win, but I remember after about maybe 20 fights, your goal was to have an even record, which it balanced out. You know,
I wanted to be half and half.
Yeah, that was a bit. And so
I think it's the same thing as what Brad said is by the time like nothing else matters until you hit the seniors. And
yeah,
I remember even my dad used to tell me when I was playing AFL. There's no point being the best 12-year-old. Like no one remembers.
Yeah, no one cares.
12-year-old. You want to be hitting your straps when you're 18.
And that's the thing. Like you're only a kid. You're only doing it to learn, and everything worked out from there. You know. So, mate, I don't know even know why I stayed. Like because you know, as a 10-year-old, every loss, I was crying every fight.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
But then I was back in the gym on the Monday.
Yeah,
and,
yeah. Because you don't know what else to do. Probably. No, yeah. This is just what I do. Big learning, though, isn't it? You know, the losses early on. And, you know, one thing I say to our guys is once you have a loss, you actually look at them and see how you can improve. Yeah. When you have a win, sometimes you can just forget about that and try and move on, but not.
Yeah, well, when you look back and you have a look and you can watch, go over your tape, and you have a loss, you can pick up the mistakes you do. But when you have a win, it's like, yeah, I won this one.
Do you need to improve to keep winning? Yeah.
So that was the early days.
Yeah, nice. So from there, so you boxed there, you won your first Australian title. So you did some training with Billy Usain as well, didn't you? You moved to Billy's gym.
Yeah, I was with my first coach, Ross, for a while, and then Arthur Tunsil was looking after it all down there at New South Wales, and then they took out, what was the age thing down there? They took out, you had to be 14 or 15 to be able to fight then.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
so that's all that rule. Yeah. So my coach sort of left after that, and he told me to go to Don Abnett. And so I went to Don Abnett first.
Yeah.
And that was before Sydney Olympics and things like that. So that would have been a good 2 years out before Sydney Olympics.
Yeah.
And then we moved on to Billy Usain from there.
Yeah, nice.
Don was having some problems.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what.
Yeah.
I can't really remember. But then, he just said, all right, if you want to go somewhere, then go to Billy. So my first coach told me to go to Don Abnett.
Yeah.
He did. And then Don Abnett told me to go to Billy Usain. So
you just did whatever you were told.
All right, we'll go back there.
So did Billy wouldn't have had his own gym back then, would he? Who was he working under? Who was the head coach at his gym?
He was our head coach then.
Oh, was he?
But
he wouldn't have had the pros back then, I don't think.
No, he was. Jeff Fenwick
ran all the pros and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, so I was at the PCYC there, and then, so he was like an apprentice from that, but doing all the pad work.
Then
he just had his style of the amateurs
back then,
and we just went under him.
Yeah. Mate, do you want to touch anything more on that, Jacko, or I'll go on to some crazy stories we've got about Brad?
No, we can go
we'll go on. We'll start throwing in some other questions later. Mate, everybody that's wrote questions, and a lot of your ex-teammates say you were the class dickhead, which is fair. I can fucking vouch for that as well after many trips we've done together and many, many nights staying at the house and training together, you know. Mate, I believe you guys used to pick on Phil Goods, the team manager, all the time.
I don't know what it was, mate. We just used to pick on any manager that we had now. Obviously, the managers used to cop it all the time.
Well, you guys were together all the time. So your camp's back. It wasn't like now they go into a camp for a week and then they're home a couple of weeks in Thailand. You're
3 months.
Mate. You're months and then a week home and then another 3 months, aren't you?
We had some good times, you know. Like even 2002, we had some funny stuff happen there with our manager and that. And, just playing tricks on one another, and then with Phil too. Like it was good with Phil because he could take it and he could also give it back too. So, but we were in it was about 2 weeks before going into, or 3 weeks before we're going into the village. So we all got our come off games gear then and everything, and we were doing, what was it? We were doing, everything was just all about us.
Yeah.
And everything. Yeah. And Ramesh said, "Oh, let's just play trick on film," And I'm sorry for dubbing in Romo if he. So we're all there in our Commonwealth Games gear, and it's the gear that you had to wear when you won a medal at the podium. Anyway, so we rang up, and Romo put on a voice, and he's going, "Oh yeah, hey Phil, just it's such and such from Inside Sport, mate." And he goes, "Oh yeah, so who do you want to speak to, mate?" And I go, No, we want to do a story on the managers this time. Don't worry about the athletes, we want to know what you go through." And he goes, "Oh yeah, so yeah," and we get, and then he's just gone, "Right, can we meet you at the Monash University, that's where we were training, at such and such time in the afternoon?" And he goes, "Yeah, mate, no worries." And he goes, "Oh, can you wear your the tracksuit that the boys are gonna, that, you know, if you win a medal, can you wear that one?" So here he is. He's all dressed up. I'm going, "Where are you going, Phil?" He goes, "Oh, I've got an interview." I'm going, "Oh, really?" He goes, "Yeah, yeah." "Oh, what's this about?" He goes, "Oh, no, they don't want to speak to any of the athletes. I want to speak to the managers." And they're, "Oh, hey, what's that?" Anyway, so we're there and you know, we're all having a photo, and there's someone's got a photo where we're all behind Phil and we're all just doing, like, stupid.
Pull
like,
a finger in that.
Laugh, yeah, look at this. Anyway, he goes down there, and we left him down there for a good hour and a half.
And he was just walking around looking.
Just waiting. We just said, "Oh, should we ring?" "Nah, let it go for a little bit longer." Anyway, we ring him. "Oh, Phil, sorry, mate. We can't get out there, mate. We have to cancel." "Oh, no worries." Anyway, so Phil comes back to him. "What happened, Phil?" "Oh, they had to postpone. Something happened." And anyway, it just went on from there. But we used to pick on Phil all the time. You know, he used to have these... Mate, you used to have these Dunlops or something with the Velcro.
Yeah.
And like, we used to sit there and watch him. And just, we got these Velcro. "What the bloody hell are you doing with them?" Anyway, we stole them off him. And Benny McEachran, bloody, he put them on.
Rest in peace, Benny.
Yeah, rest in peace, Benny, funny fellow. And then he had them on. And you know, the old days, we always have used to line up in front of the coach. Anyway, we're standing, everyone's got their boxing gear on, and either boxing boots or their ASICs or whatever we got given, and there's Benny and these Dunlops with the Velcro. So our warm-up was to play, like, Frisbee. We used to play, like, you know, Frisbee all games anyway, and there's Benny just sliding around everywhere because the shoes had no grip on
him. Oh,
Phil's rocked up in his thongs, and he's rocked up in his thongs. We go, "Mate, where's your shoes, mate? It's freezing because I can't find them."
Ice skating in his fucking Dunlop mollies.
No grip on him.
How long did it take him to pick it up?
Oh, it was good. It was like nearly the end of the session.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, Benny was a character, wasn't he?
Oh, mate, he used to do some funny stuff, mate. You know, he had type 1 diabetes, and I remember me and him and Pittman and Will in France training, and he had an attack that night. I don't know what it is, a high or a low, they get both, I think. We brought all these lollies, you know, just to snack on during the night because it got pretty boring at night. Anyway, we're there, pitch black.
Well, you make them wait, though.
Yeah,
mate. Good idea.
Can of Coke and a lolly. And we wake up during the night and, fuck, here's someone going through our lolly bag. And there's bloody Benny. We go, "Benny, you right, mate?" "Yeah, mate, I need some sugar, I need something." Anyway, woke up next morning, he's ate easily $30 worth of lollies. So that's probably $90 euro back
then. Yeah, yeah.
And he's just ate mine and Pity's lollies, and, you know, he's sleeping. He's got lollies stuck to his back and his head just from, because he couldn't see or anything.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's just, you have to give it to him, otherwise it wouldn't be.
Mate, and Benny, did he win 2 Comm Games medals?
Yeah, he won 2 bronze.
He won 02 and 06. Did he win the one in Melbourne too?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, mate. So we've mentioned a couple of guys with diabetes, haven't we, Jacko, in the past, that have Bailey Mannix, well, Shara, obviously, diabetes, and a couple of kids that we've known in the past through our gym that have struggled through diabetes. And Benny McEachran, yeah, won 2 bronze medals at the Commonwealth Games. So proving it can be done, but you've got to be very strict on yourself. You know,
well, you've got to be strict, and you've got to be watching what you're eating, and then before checking and after. So it's stressful, mate. Like, yeah. You know, back then, like, I only learned a bit more about diabetes.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
Like, geez, like, I wouldn't, you know, want to wish it on anyone.
Yeah,
to check
it's a tough one.
Playing sport and then, you know, growing up as a young adult as well.
Yeah, for sure. So Mate, who else? Oh, mate, actually, no, this is one about you. I remember you telling me this story. One year night, you'd been out on the piss at the AIS, right? What, only one night, honestly.
Yeah,
one night. You'd been out on the drink at the AIS one night and there was cameras, right?
Mm.
And you could not get in. You were going to be in, you're going to be in trouble, have penalties. And you know the story where you shimmied along the wall,
yeah,
climbed
yeah.
over the gate. Yeah. Give us that one. Give us that one. That's a cracker.
Yeah, well, that was heading into 06, I think. So we're at the Institute. There's cameras everywhere. And Coach Bodo used to check the cameras, actually.
Yeah.
And we just had big Saturday night. I think on the Monday we were supposed to be flying to the Philippines for a training camp. And that was leading into then from the Philippines to Melbourne then the games. Or it was the World Champs or something anyway. And, yeah, a few of us got on the drink and then I left my card. Oh no, I didn't want to swipe my card because he would see what time.
Oh, so they could check out which your card.
Yeah, with the cameras. Yeah, so
I'm dirty dog, this horror.
I said, I'm not swiping my card. Anyway, you know, being 51 kilos, and there's a little gap above the metal doors that look like a jail up the tube.
That's right, yeah, they were like
and when it had,
just bars, weren't they, pretty much?
And they had like a little spike. Anyway, I climbed up there. And my jeans got caught in the spike. So I was on the other side of like nearly home, mate. I was nearly there. And I'm just hanging.
Hanging by your belt.
Hanging by my belt. No, it went through my jeans.
Oh, I did it, your jeans.
Yeah, so
you were jeans just swinging off your jeans on top of the gate.
Just waiting, and I didn't have the energy because I was too drunk to try to lift myself up. But I was like sideways.
So you just hung out there
for a bit. So I just hung there for a bit, waited till I got a bit of energy, then I lifted myself up trying to get it through. And then I reckon I would have been up there for a good 5-7 minutes.
Holy shit.
Just hanging there, just going, I can't move, and then like trying to dodge the cameras and then all that. And then,
did you end up getting caught?
No, I didn't get caught.
No?
I was lucky, but yeah, a few of the boys used to go through the front door and the security guard used to dob them in. I thought I could fit through here, mate.
Any captain stories? From any stories from the captains of the squads, Fletchy or any of those guys?
Nah,
who else?
We have Fletch, you know, Pity was, you know, always a good boy.
He's always good.
Yeah, Fletch, yeah, would have been a few. I think he was out in that bender that night. Or I don't know where we went, but we were out on the benders that night. Benny, what? I remember we had a big fight tournament down in Bendigo. It was against New Zealand. Anyway, we come back. And that we had the day off the next day.
Yeah.
And there's Benny. We all gone to the pub. Yeah, we'll have a few beers in it. And there's Benny. We're all playing the pokes. And Benny's having a beer and having a smoke. And then Coach Bodo walks in. He walks down the pokey. You see Benny having a smoke and a beer.
Oh,
but
shit.
Like, no, the captains were right. You know, like, I think Toddy and Fletch had a bit of a fight one time.
That was at the games, wasn't it?
No, that was at the AIS.
So, oh, okay. Yeah. What about I remember, I've seen photos of this. What about when Todd Kidd got on the plane dressed in South Sydney gear? Where was that from?
That was,
Chicago World Championships?
Maybe? No, I didn't go there. That was from, where did it come from? That would have been China World Champs.
Oh, would have been?
Yeah, Minyang 05. And then Coach went back to Germany to see his family, and we had Mick Daly was to look after us, and we were stuck at was either Hong Kong airport or somewhere. We were stuck there for ages, 6 hours, mate. And Toddy had his South Sydney jersey on, he taped his head. We're just sitting there, and we go,
traveled the whole way like
what
that.
What do we do, boys? And then we brought like a liter of vodka, and then they had like the Burger King. So Burger King, they supersize your drinks. So we're just buying like lemonade and just tipping heaps of vodka in it. By the time the flight come, we're sitting there and everyone's drunk, and we're just giving it to Fletcher, going, "Yeah, you're a captain's arsehole." Like just baiting.
Oh, yeah. Fletch didn't drink.
Fletch was drinking, but you just had enough. He goes, "Yeah, right. We're on the plane now. We're safe."
And no one else cared.
But Toddy was sitting across from him. I'm sitting next to Toddy, and he just baiting him. And then the guy behind us getting the shits. I think he dobbed us in, actually. He rang the Institute.
Oh, he got in trouble.
Yeah, we got in trouble. And then Toddy locked himself in the toilets.
What?
Yeah, on the plane. So instead of pulling, he was trying to push to get out, and the door's like, boom, 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 and he's banging, banging. He walks out.
Excellent.
Walks out a bit of, you know, the old school footy tape around the ears. The jersey.
That's right. Yeah, he was fully like Paul Sirenin in the roost as a rabbit.
He was giving it the Fletch, just pissing him off, just saying, "Captain," just like, I can't remember what it was, but just giving it to him. But yeah, some pretty good stories. O2 was another good one where we stole the golf cart.
Tell us about that one.
So a few of the boys
stole. So this was in Manchester?
Yeah, this in the game. So we're in the village, and you just get used to talking to the security guards, same people every day, and this and that. But anyway, so a few of the boys are on the golf cart, and they go towards the gate to get out to the main street, and the security guard opened up the gate.
So just let them go.
Yeah, let them go. So the boys are driving on the main street in Manchester. And the cops pull them over, so they're hands on the roof of the golf cart, getting patted down and shit like that.
Were they boxers?
Yeah, all of us. Yes.
Oh, right.
Yeah, I think Edie might have been on there. And a hand went missing from a object in the village.
What, like a mannequin or something?
Yeah, like a hand went missing. Someone's got it. I don't know who's got it. I'm going to say Dave Turner, maybe. But we all signed it.
Yeah.
So someone's got it.
Somebody's got it.
Yeah. Just shit just going.
Oh, excellent. Well, mate, the things you got to do to keep past the time, eh?
That's it when you get beat first day at competition at 1 o'clock in the arvo. You don't have much to do but play tricks and get drunk and
upset everybody else.
Upset everyone else, yeah. Nice. It would have been pretty bad back then.
So the, mate, let's go to Olympics 2000.
Mm-hmm.
Mate, it was a rough trot for you.
Yeah, rough trot.
But tell us, Brad was the 48-kilo representative, made weight at the Oceania Games. Was it like 6 months before or something like that?
Yeah, 6 months. This one was 6 feet. Like, the boys are just, like, nowadays, they're only doing small camp. We were doing 6 or 4 months
yeah.
camp. So,
and you were still boxing at 51 before that, but you had to squeeze to 48, didn't you, anyway?
Down, yeah.
So 48 kilo, Oceania champion, 6 months later, and you're only 17 years old 17, at this time. Yep. So you still had a lot of growing, even though you didn't grow much, but you still apparently had a lot of growing.
Still waiting.
So, mate, give us the rundown, what happened at the games, because you hadn't made weight for 6 months. Let us know in your words what happened.
Just totally different training, being in a camp like that. You know, we're down the institute all the time and, you know, a bit more weights. Totally different than what I was used to doing, you know. Like, when you're in a PCYC and stuff like that, wherever we were, it's just, you know, you do some push-ups, sit-ups.
You
know, just sparring. Yeah, a lot of that. And, you know, we had a very big schedule. So we were, like, in the US for ages. We were up in Darwin for a long time.
Were you making 48 for those tournaments? Or
the first time I didn't even go. The boys went to the President Cup in Bali. And I had to stay in Darwin for me and Henry at the stadium because I had bad shin splints then too. So I was out for a good 2-3 months. Oh, 2 months really with that. So I had to stay in Darwin and just get physio twice a day and do whatever I could. And then when we went to the US, it was just hard training.
Yeah.
I don't even think we were sparring or doing partner work with the US or anything. Just getting hammered. Yep. And then we went from there to a tournament. No, then we went to comp sparring in Noumea, and that's where a lot of teams went from there. So there was the French, the Germans.
Met up in Noumea.
Yeah, we went to Noumea, just a train camp there.
All those countries too, it's
heaps.
It's nowhere in boxing, really, is it? But interesting that they all went there.
Yeah, so we were there for, we were there for 3 weeks, and that was where other shit that I can tell you about, that split. Remember how there's a story about in our Olympic team, there was a divided? Divide, and that's how that shit happened. But anyway, I was struggling when we were in the US. I think we had to be under the 51 kilo or had to be a kilo off weight in the US, and before we could go to eat breakfast, and I was still struggling, and like it was just a struggle to make it. So I went and jumped in a hot shower or a bath, and then made it just. But I was just that deal. I just felt flat. Everything.
So every day they're checking your weight.
Yeah.
So kilo off.
Yeah. Every wow. back then. Yeah. So like all
that can't be healthy though, because you're just gonna be draining.
So we were just drainers.
Yeah.
It was pretty stupid back then. Like. You know, and then the Commonwealth Games after that, we had to be, you can go next division above you, you had to be under. So every morning, like, for the other games, had to be 54 back then, so under, which is fine. But then when we got to, we flew into Sydney and everything, and they're just the eye-opener, and you're still a young kid, and, you know, how big the games were back then, I was just struggling, eh? Like, go to the sauna, wasn't eating much, and just struggled, like... It was coming up to weigh in. I remember going for a run with all my sweat gear on, and it would have been a good 7K and just hardly no sweat or anything. I just couldn't lose anything.
Yeah.
And then that's when I woke up the next morning, went to the sauna, did everything I could, and it just wasn't budging. So I ended up weighing in at 48.3 and just called it a day. And
weren't you in the sauna with – were you in the sauna with Mick?
I was in the sauna with James Swan.
Oh, yeah,
and
right.
Swan, he sort of went to coach and said he's not done.
This guy's no good.
Yeah, and we had to go see the doctor for some reason in the village. I don't know why we did. It wasn't for our medical or anything, but when we're in there, the athletes had to go see the doctor just check up on us.
Yeah, yeah.
And he said, "How are you feeling?" And I remember saying to him, "Mate, I just feel I'm fucked."
Yeah, yeah.
And I look drained, sick.
Yeah.
And that's when I weighed in at 48.3, so 0.3 off, and
that's the way it is.
That's when myself and Bodo, we had our split.
Oh, that's right. You guys didn't talk for a while.
We didn't talk till Athens.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. You went to Comm Games,
and he
didn't really coach you in the corner, did he?
Second,
yeah.
But I had my original coach, but he didn't really say anything to me either.
Yeah, so right.
He wouldn't even really talk to me on camp either, which. Yeah, that's fair enough. Well, it is what it is.
Everyone,
we end up.
But you guys are sweet now, right?
Yeah, we're sweet now. We made. You know, Athens was good. We got along good. We used to sit there and chat. He was happy with the way I fought in Athens, and you know, well, I can go up there and talk to him about all you know, normal stuff. And, have a good laugh with him and things like that. But we didn't talk to each other for 4 years.
Mentally, after that, though, was that a bit of a struggle? Like, did you go through any depression or any?
At that age, I probably didn't even know what depression was back then. But I think that's when it started the first.
Yeah, for sure. Because like, and having people have like those expectations that you've got to make weight, and then being a young kid and not meeting that.
Yeah.
Was that a struggle? Or?
Yeah, making weight, and also, man, I was like walking, hitting the streets, and everyone knew me for the kid who didn't make weight. I lived 20 minutes away from the Olympic Games back then.
Yeah. Were you living on the Sunny Coast then?
No, I was Sydney boy.
Oh, you're still in Sydney then? I was 20
minutes away from Homebush.
So you were that local boy.
Yeah, I just copped it.
Yeah.
And then I remember going out with the boys after, like when their competition was finishing, that people were saying to me, oh, you're that kid that didn't make weight, like all that. I think when the Olympic Games finished, that's when it started playing mind games with me, and then I had to take a break for a good year. I didn't go near a gym. I didn't pick up skip and rope. I didn't do anything. And then that's when people were saying, oh, he won't. I told him I'm coming up to 51. That's when I made the move from Sydney up to the Sunshine Coast. Yeah. And that's when I hooked up with Mike Foley at Shamrock. And good mates with Justin Kane. And everything just changed then. And we just said, righto, I'm going up at 51 kilos. I'm going to make Commonwealth Games and prove to people that I belong in this.
Yeah, you belong.
International level. And that's where it started. I think getting back to it, it started to help me mentally. But after, when I left Sydney, I had no one. Depression. Although I still go through a bit of depression now. Anxiety. Well, I've got bad anxiety. Like that's, you know, I'm on tablets every day.
Yeah.
I try to keep fit and give back to people now and talk to people. But I still struggle.
Yeah,
it's just a thing.
So you think you overcame that by removing yourself from home
Sydney,
a bit?
Yeah. To tell you the truth, I reckon I've been back in my hometown since I left, because I just packed up and left. I come up here for a holiday for a week, a
and just stayed.
Went back home, grabbed all my shit. The next day I was back up on the coast.
Oh, really? Yeah, is that what happened?
Yeah. Just like that.
Being a local boy too and going in the Olympics, did you find a lot of people jumped on your bandwagon and then dropped off after it?
Or? Yeah, dropped off. You just...
Or didn't want anything to do with you after? Or?
Like, and that's the funny thing about boxing. Yeah. You'll have all these good mates around you. As soon as you lose, no one gives a fuck about it.
Yeah, we've seen it many times in our own gym.
The boys
gym,
from the gym actually asked that question, and I'm glad we touched on it.
But the only ones that are your good mates are the people that are at the gym and that will sit in that change room with you when you lose.
Yeah, that's
right. Or they'll help you and then they'll say to you, right, hey, let's figure it a different way. Or your coach or someone will sit with you and think. But you got to remember back then too, Jacko, like, if we got beat in Australia, or if we got beat and we were in the Australian side, if we got beat, they didn't give a fuck about it. That's it, you dropped.
Yeah.
It wasn't this point system or the whatever they go through now where if you lose a couple, you're credited, you've got so many points, you're still up there. Once you lose, you're
like
out.
A grading system.
Yeah.
Back then it was if you're on the team,
lose,
you're on
done.
The team.
Yeah,
lose,
yeah.
Done. I don't care about you.
Yeah, next.
Yeah.
But it took a while. I didn't class myself Olympian until 2004.
Yeah.
So
you had to come to terms with saying two-time Olympian. But it
ages.
Is true because you were there.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, you didn't compete.
Yeah.
It would have taken a while.
Anyway, all I want to do when I made Commonwealth Games in 2002 was make the side. I didn't care what result I got. Just prove people.
I'm back.
To say, look, I'm back. I'm at a different weight. Look out. I had people bet on me when I made the Athens Olympics, saying that I won't be able to make Athens Olympics. I had people betting, saying Brad won't make it.
Really?
Yeah. And then for start,
how do you ignore all that noise, though?
I just love proving people wrong.
And I suppose back in the day, the social media was not what it is today.
No.
Where everybody now vote.
Word of mouth,
yeah, is terrible. But you know what I mean? That now this social media can fucking, if you read into it and buy into it, it can kill you. You know what I mean? But you've got to realize, I was watching the Matty Johns podcast the other day, and he was saying,
this is similar, this one. We got beers.
It's similar. We got beers. We got Iron Jacks, aren't we, today?
Yep.
And,
Jack.
Jack's not drinking, but anyway. Matty Johns was saying, he was talking about Ricky Stewart, and when he was at Canterbury, he was struggling reading every newspaper and every text message and everything. He said, and then I don't know how, but he come to grips with the fact that unless it can help me, unless it's actually really one of my close-knit people that's going to help my life, it's fucking noise. I don't even need to listen to it.
Yep.
You've got to really – the young kids coming through nowadays have got to really work out what's relevant and the rest of it is bullshit, because they could be saying about you anyway. It's just now with Facebook where we actually see it, and they've got balls big enough to ride it and then run away when you see them, you know.
Yeah. And look, so – for me, I had, we're not swimmers, we're not runners where we if we go train, let's try go to PB. We have short-term goals and then long-term goals. So my long-term goal was to just get back and make Commonwealth Games. 2002, to the trip, I don't even know who I fought in 2002 to make them games. 2002, would have been Ramesh was 48. I'm thinking about Olympics, so it doesn't really matter. But, so my main goal for 2002 was just to make it. That was at Manchester, and I made it. Then 2004 was totally different for me. It was where I had people wanting to bet or saying yes about me. So I had a tough draw. Like, when we were at the Aussies, I had two other Olympians in there. I had one from Iran that was based in Sydney, and I had Earl Wilshire, who was a 51 Olympian from Sydney.
Yep.
All right. Then we went over to Oceania. And then Oceania, I had to have four fights. And so from the Aussie titles that were in Adelaide, I just, for me, it was totally different. Like, I ended up blitzing everyone that year. I think at the Aussies, I beat everyone by 12. And then when I went to Oceania's, I beat everyone by more than 15 points. It was 20 points.
Yeah, that's right. Because back in the day, was it 20 points? Or 15?
It was 20 points, but you had to do it before going into the fourth. So I think, you know, like.
So whistle one, used to go, if you were more than 15 clear points up in front, bam, whistle, they call it.
You wouldn't even see 552 fights in the nationals anymore.
No, you wouldn't.
Well, even maybe even 56, it wouldn't even be a packed division.
Yeah, so you've like got one or two guys so in there.
There's a lot more depth back then than your weight.
It was, so yeah.
To do it, it's not like you're getting
three. Not state level, but at national level, they all
and
come
back
together.
Then, back then when we were fighting, we had so many good fighters there. And all them, like, the littler divisions, like, not being rude, but we cleaned it out, like, so we owned it. They were ours. I fought Mark Kwan in 02.
Yeah, oh, yeah, that's right, yeah, yeah.
But for 10 years after that, I didn't get beat in Australia after, like, when I started to come back, when I moved up here and stuff like that. It was just totally different, you know, in Australia was, you know, and when you went into it to a state title or a Aussies, we just cleaned it out in the end. So after I came up here with Queensland, I could get fights. After that, I won 10 state titles of a walkover.
Yeah.
Just cleaned it out.
Yeah, Queensland were a strong straight then, hey? Yeah. Queensland were a strong straight. Like, we had Fletchy, Toddy, yourself,
Toddy,
Benny McEachran,
Beanie, Caney.
Man, you could have taken an Australian team from Queensland, really. It was that strong.
Yeah. But back then, them guys, we just cleared the divisions out. So, you know, for starters, if a new guy was coming into your division, you already were 15 points ahead of them by how they knew your record or what we've done to other people, like mentally. Yeah.
So after your successful amateur career, I think your last fight was in Sydney, and I helped Mike out in the corner there. That was in Sydney, wasn't it, your last amateur fight? Well, as we thought about it there at the Nationals.
I think that was 2011. 2011.
2011,
yeah.
2011.
Wasn't his last amateur fight,
right? At the time he thought it was. Thought he was done, probably had a massive drink after that event. And then a couple of years later, Don Broadhurst, who's a former opponent of yours at the 06 Com Games, you fought Don, and he got you there, and then Don went on to win the gold medal. Don Broadhurst moved over to Australia and to train with us and to further his professional career. Another small man syndrome guy. And, he came over, and you just thought, oh, well, we'll come and do a bit of sparring. And then what happened then? It was like you thought, fuck it, I'll dip my toe in the water again. Let's have a go.
Yeah, I remember the first time he wanted to do some sparring. I come down here and we pumped out six rounds and we just stood in the phone booth. I just belted you.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Just revenge.
Yeah.
And then we just become really good mates. We still speak now and Don still speaks to you. Yeah. And all things are going well over there for him. And, you know, he's very talented and he's very committed and, you know, he always gives us all the rap.
He always checks up with the club.
He's just one of them guys that we wish he could stay out here longer. But, you know, he had some
family issues
and
unfortunately.
Lost his mum.
Yeah.
And it was pretty sudden too. And you know, we miss him. But, you know, he
sparked the excitement back in you, didn't he? Yeah. Let's, I can do this.
Yeah. And, you know, and just listen to stories over there, what he was saying, like how he won the Commonwealth title and things like that.
Yeah.
He won the Commonwealth Games and stuff. And then you just go, oh, yeah, like it's still not.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we signed it, decided to register as a pro and then
had a few fights. And I suppose since day one has turned a pro, we just said, fuck it, let's just, whatever's available, let's have a go because we haven't got time on our sides. And you know what? We won a Queensland title and. Mate, the two fights that stick out for my mind for you as a professional was when we were both away fights, when we went to – look, we had some good fight nights up in your hometown at Mooloolaba, weren't they? Mooloolaba. They were good. But, mate, when you won the Queensland title, that was on Joe Panisi's card up in Townsville. Went to Townsville there. That was a good one. Me and you went up there and we took it off the guy that, you know, it's from there. That was excellent. And then, mate – the biggest balls I've ever seen you show was against Rex So, ranked number 7 in the world at the time, and we were probably not even ranked in the top 40, you know what I mean? Like, not even ranked, because he'd had about 14 pro fights, I think. I'm just guessing it.
No, he was 18-0, mate.
Was he 18-0? Was he 18?
Yeah.
And you'd had five, hadn't you?
Yeah, five or
six.
Well, he's my last, so I had 8, so it must have been 7.
Yeah, yeah, so it was a big – a big opportunity, but I remember you just saying, yeah, fuck it, let's go. Let's do this. Went over there, and man, I put the highlight video up again the other week on Instagram, and holy shit, it just reminded me how you just dug in, because you weren't known for standing toe-to-toe and having a bang. You were known for hit and move and people not touching you. And you did that for a couple of rounds, remember? And then you just got caught into the fight, and holy shit, that was some fight. And you were wobbling him at times, and I thought we were going to stop him at times. And, you know, it's no secret you weren't a big knockout artist or anything. Yeah. But, mate, geez, that was one crack of a fight. Unfortunately, you know, he clipped you in the end, a couple of body shots and took its toll on you and that. But, mate, that was an amazing fight. That was a great experience. What do you reckon? That was your best effort as a pro, even though you didn't get the gold.
We all had a goal over there, we had a goal in the pros, was just give it a go,
give it a go,
and then just see what happens. And
yeah,
we were still enjoying it then, but just the opportunity to go over there and fight for it, it could have opened up a lot more doors.
Yeah,
if you got the decision, but
you got to take those opportunities, haven't you? If they're there, you know, you win that, and you're on the only on the world scale. Well, Rex So was a top. Rex So was a top ranked boxer at the time, wasn't he? He was with Top Rank, and the doors would have opened. But sometimes, yeah, you've just got to take those opportunities. And
we punch it out of each other for like 7 or 8 rounds, and you look at things different back then. Now,
yeah,
I don't think I would change anything from that prep. I think we had the best prep. We had everything.
Yeah,
probably the heat got us in the end because it was bloody hot over there.
It was hot.
And,
yeah,
you know, but he's a local boy. Couple of thousand people there watching, but
it was a big event, wasn't it?
Yeah, I wouldn't change anything. And it was good to again say, yep, that's it.
I'm retired again.
Yeah.
And then it continues when you come back and had how many fights at the state championships?
Had two.
Come back as an amateur.
Yeah.
We were told that we could come back through the IEBA rules and represent, trying to go for a third Commonwealth Games, and that was the plan at home at Gold Coast. But unfortunately, the New South Wales Combat Sports Authority ruled you out of the national title before you even got an opportunity.
Mate, dirty dogs.
Yeah, that was a tough one. We'll leave that one there, right?
Mate,
I wanted to touch on that. Was my first it was my second experience working with Brad, and him being on a trip.
Yeah,
the first was I think like 2015 nationals, and Brad come up as a mentor. And just spent time with us and the team, and I just found it really pushed a lot of people. Like, it helped me in my mental preparation for the World Championships trials. But I think it was good for someone to be there that understands the process and understands the mental battles of making weight. And then we went to Comm Games together as teammates, and it was good to have Brad on the trip.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Just be able to guide you through.
Yeah, because that was tough times, and
I had a bad big loss there as well, and having you there and people like Toddy to talk to was like a really good thing. And
yeah, but look at it like, all right, Commonwealth Games. Oh, when Toddy went to Athens, he got beat by Anoush, so he was in that situation already. Then come back, he made Beijing. I got beat in Perth at the Aussie Titles.
That's right.
When by Jared Wood, who I fought in the 2011 Aussie Titles, and I beat him.
Whatever.
21 something, and ended up getting beat by him, and then shock results, and then we can't do anything about it. No one's going to protest for you. No one. They don't care, mate. The judges. Something needs to be done with them. They're either not being mean to them or anything, but like just the late nights, like they're watching fights at like 10 o'clock and probably tired. It's a big week for them.
No money.
You just got to You just got to take on the chin, and then you do come back bigger and better. You do. You put it behind you. You move on. You're going to be pissed off for a few days, but you wake up the next morning and just move on.
That's the worst
thing about it is you've got to sit there with your teammates until the buddy finishes, and then when you get home, what do you do next? You got to sit there and got to start planning out your longer picture, your shorter picture, and go. And that's what you guys have done at the moment.
Yeah.
You set your goals. You've set
world championships
to make world champs. Yeah. You did that. You went. Oh, your first one was what was it? Arafura.
Well, this Arafura state championships, national. Australian championships, yeah. And
so,
then
and that's what you have to do. You have to sit back. You have to. The thing that pisses me off is when the guy knows that you bash him.
Yeah.
And comes up to you and says they got it wrong.
Yeah.
That's the worst.
That's the worst. Yeah. That is the worst. Yeah.
Com games. And you, well, you can't fix it.
Can't.
You can't
just get out of your face.
Can you go tell him?
Get out of your face.
But I think
you keep coming up telling me. Just piss off.
Yeah.
And it was like what you said before, like how we're talking about everyone's on the bandwagon until you lose.
Mm.
And I remember that Com games after my loss. It was you, Shara, Gareth.
That was it, yeah.
Oh, and my dad.
That's your circle. That's your that's where your circle's at there. When you're losing, that's who's really in your circle.
Yeah. I think it would go a long way to have people like Brad giving back to boxing community, like even like Boxing Queensland or someone to get you in a role to mentor kids.
From now I'm only just starting slowly getting back in the box. When I walk away, I just walk away from it.
Yeah.
Went to bowls, didn't you? Lawn bowls.
Yeah, play lawn bowls, back in that now. And, you know, I'm lucky to have my partner who, you know, all these titles that I won as a pro. So the Queensland one, the WBF one.
Yeah.
And then the WBU one. They used to hide in my car, in the boot of my car.
Yeah.
Now she's got them out displaying. She's got all my medals out now. And now I can sit there and watch boxing.
Yeah.
It's
not a secret anymore. Yeah.
And you helped with the Futures program a few weeks ago.
I helped with that.
How'd you find that? Good?
Good, mate. Just easy to tell them stories. And a lot of it comes back to depression and anxiety. And I try to tell them, make sure you've got a plan.
It's common in this game.
Yes, yeah, because boxing, mate, you got nothing.
Yeah.
Unless you got something behind you.
Yeah, you got to keep reassessing.
What does your life look like now after boxing? So you said you took a bit of time away from the sport.
Yeah, I just took a bit of time. Now, you know, my big passion's, you know, I started working with Deadly Choices there for 5 years, and Gareth helped me get that job, and I was there for 5 years, and I was a mentor and ambassador and all that, and just people listening to your story and then teaching kids, you know, eating healthy and how important exercise is, and it's okay to lose, you know, and things like that. Kids need to be taught how to lose.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, and if I go out and play, like I've got a little son now, when he's older and he wants to play a game of footy or something out the back or table tennis or anything, I'm not going to let him win.
Yeah, that's it. You've got to learn to win as well. Yeah,
it's mentally in my head where I can switch from one person and go to another person. Like, I love to win. I don't train to lose or anything like that. So he's got to learn it. Everyone's got to learn how to lose. I was lucky enough that I had, you know, 9 straight.
Yeah.
I learned the hard way, but that's what happens. So now I work with a lot of Indigenous kids now and try to guide them. Still working with the Olympic Committee, so the Australian Olympic Committee send me places down. They got
Uluru the other week.
So we go out to Uluru, and that's
with. That mean real proud for you, being a proud Indigenous man.
Oh mate, that's a blast! That's the second time they've taken me out there, and that's
you've got to run around the rock, don't you, mate?
Oh mate,
struggle.
Jeez,
a few stubbies. Well, before, actually,
no, dry. But you know, it's something with the Indigenous Marathon Foundation with Rob DiCostello, who's another Olympian in marathon running, and he does a lot of work with Indigenous kids. And what he does is he wants communities to get out there and just get off their ass and run. He said it's easy to run. You know,
everyone can do it.
It's not hard to run. Just move your legs. And then all these communities.
Is hard for you at the moment.
Yeah, I'm going to struggle on my running at the moment.
Anyway, and he sends. There's about 28 different Aboriginal communities from around Australia. It's probably over 200 and something people, and we run around Uluru, and they send out Olympians. So I was lucky enough to get onto that, and I've been lucky enough to go out there twice now with them, and. You know, we were supposed to do a relay around the rock, and then we had one of our hockey players in June. She said, oh, bloody, let's just run around the whole rock. And it's like, it's a good fucking 12K.
And you're like, fuck, I'm happy with the relay, mate.
I said, love, I just bloody ran 5K this morning, and now you want me to have a 3-hour break, and I've got to run around all the room. You're kidding. End up doing it. And then, but it's something different. Like, and spiritually, it is, when you're running around there, it's totally different. I don't know where you get the energy from or anything like that. You can just run and it's for the kids. But you you pulling, mate?
No, just hang up. Sorry, live here.
So I've been doing that, and you know, and now they've got a program called Unleash, and what they're doing with that is you go out to schools and you teach kids. Oh, you don't teach kids. You don't teach nothing. You just tell them your story.
Yeah, nice.
I love how I became an Olympian.
Yeah, that's excellent.
So, and then it might inspire one person.
So what do you talk about, like your setbacks and
how I start things exactly or? From yeah. how I started.
Yeah.
So from 10, and then I just say believe, learn
yeah.
from your losses, yeah, everything yeah. like that. And then I go into mental health, stuff like that, and just say, look, it's a bumpy road. Like
such a good message to get out. Yeah. Though.
And you have a look. You, I bet you, if you go home now, and you have a look, you sit back, Jacko, and you have a look at your how boxing's taking you.
Yeah.
It looked like a bloody old school road map.
Yeah. True. Right.
It won't be, fuck, here we go, just going to cross that bridge, that's there.
It's not a straight path, is it?
We didn't have Nabmans back then, mate. We had...
Refinex?
Refinex. You have a look at it, and it's, you're going to go down here, you're going to go up street, it's going to take you left, it's going to take you right, you're going to have a few speed humps, dead ends, but you'll get to that goal when the time comes.
Yeah, that's right.
Recently you lost your dad and your best mate. Tell us the impact he had on your life as a young boxer growing up.
Yeah, just the influence they have on you, like as a kid, getting you the training, being there at the fights, looking after you when you lose,
celebrating when
you win.
After your 214 fights, Dad would have probably seen 195 of them.
Oh, easy.
The ones overseas might not
have seen. Yeah, the only ones you can see.
Maybe 180 or something like that he must have seen,
And then, but they're always there. And you know they're proud because back then you'd show them the video and they'd be showing his mates and paper articles and things like that, but your dad's always your number one supporter and
probably your number one critic as well.
Oh,
when shit's not going right, you need somebody to tell you how it is.
I could tell you know. When I had to lose weight, I always used to lie to Dad about my weight.
Yeah.
And used to say, oh, yeah, I'm 1 kilo off, where I used to tell my mum the truth and say, yeah, I'm actually 3.
I do exactly the same thing.
Yeah, only because he'll be stressing.
Yeah.
And, you know.
And now your dad knows, Jacko. You're living it now, but your dad's going to know.
Dad's all in control. What are you? Oh, yeah. Yeah, oh, yeah, he got this. And if he's happy, then you're happy. But if you do something wrong or you mistrain, what the fuck are you doing today?
Yeah.
It's all right, Dad.
Yeah.
Get out there. But he pushes all.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I got my sister used to dance all the time. My other younger brother playing footy, he would, me two other brothers probably would have been better boxers than what I was. Mm. The younger one was supposed to be a better boxer than what I was. And that's from my first coach who said that I would go places. Just how Ricky was. Ricky could hit. You could feel in his punches. Younger, but he could just hit. But he went footy ways. My brother just ended up, my other brother just stopped. But Dad's always there. Like, he used to drive me to Bankstown. Like, you got to remember all these places where I used to train. So we had, where I lived to Parramatta was a good 20-minute drive. From my house at Penrith was a good 40-minute drive, and then my house at Bankstown in Peakow, traffic was a good 40 to an hour.
It's a fair commitment from parents, isn't it?
Yeah. So your dad's always there, but they only want the best out of you. Like, we used to have so many good arguments.
Mate, you know, he was a good man, and I remember he was always so proud of you, even at the latter end of your career when you were boxing professional. He'd always, both him and your mum, would always come up to me and give me a hug and everything and say, thanks for looking after Brad. You know, even though you're a man now, you can make your own decisions, but it was always a good feeling that they thought you were in good hands, which was
safe.
Yeah, it's a good feeling. It's a good feeling.
You only get one mum and dad, and then you got to look after
them. And you feel better if they approve of your shit or your new coach or whatever it is, your surroundings. It makes you, rest a bit easier, I think, too.
That's true. But he was always good, always up for a laugh, always. He just, when he rang, he just wanted to talk boxing all the time.
Yeah.
He gave him the proper information he needed.
And that was enough. With that.
How's his training going? That's it.
That was similar with my dad. That was similar for my dad for many, many years. our chats were always just about sport.
Yeah, and it wouldn't be.
But it was just the way it was. And people go, oh, are you for real? Well, that's just the way it is. Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? If, exactly, if my relationship with the way is yours with your dad, that'd be weird to me. Yeah. You know, like that's the way it is.
It's weird like that. Like, they ring up. If you were in camp, they ring up. How's your day going? Yeah, good, good training. How'd training go today? Yeah, good. All right. I've got to go. Talk to you later. It's the same fucking chat.
Yeah, yeah.
It stays the same fucking thing.
But they just need to know you're right.
How'd you go last night? Yeah, good. What'd you do? Oh, sparring. Oh, how'd you go? Who'd you spar? It's like the same question.
Yeah,
and
then
as soon as that conversation's done, he's, all right, catch ya.
All right, see you, mate.
It's the same shit. Dad, everything's fine. Yeah, just checking in.
Yeah. And then that's the rest of your life shit.
Yeah.
The rest of your life shit.
Oh, work the shit. Don't care, mate.
Yeah. And you go, right, I'll put you on to your mum. Yeah. Right, how you going, mum? Oh, yeah, how's it going down there? Yeah, mum's cold. Oh, yeah, I'll send you. And then I send you shit. Yeah, oh, yeah.
Same chat we've had since I was eight. Yeah, nice. But, mate, when you had your job at Deadly Choices, I remember you were working in the smoking area. You used to go around and explain to kids about the dangers of smoking. And, look, it's what's it called, a circumstance, I suppose, that obviously emphysema got your dad, but that's actually what you were teaching the kids about. Yeah. I want you to tell us what you told me. It sticks with me when you told me how you used to teach kids what smoking can do. If you give us about that you know, the straws.
So used to just give them a straw and try getting them to breathe out of that straw.
Mm.
Very hard to do.
Just one or a bundle of straws?
Yeah, bundle.
Yeah.
And then just how out of breath you'll be. Or used to get them to do three deep breaths, like in.
Yeah.
And then try to say the alphabet.
Yeah, right.
There's another way. And then, you know, there's all different stages of emphysema. And, you know, the old man, like, he can walk from here to the letterbox away, which is, you know, 10 minutes.
10 meters.
Not 10 minutes. Geez,
10 minutes.
Fucking dead. 10 meters, you know, he'd be stuffed. We wake up in the morning, you'd sleep in because he always used to watch late shows.
Yeah.
Sleep in about 10. He'd be good to 12. Take a while to start breathing.
Have to get on the oxygen.
Yeah. A little bit, his tablets, and then kick in. Then he'd be good. Have a lay down. 3 o'clock, he'd be good again. Have a little nap again about 3 to 4. Mum come home and then just repeat.
Had to keep resting all the time. Yeah. So, mate, I remember you telling me, like, that you used to hold like a bundle of straws and then gradually take away a few. By the end of it, you're breathing through one straw, and that used to, like, that's the lesson teaching kids or people how fucking hard it is with emphysema. So just stay away from the durries, you know. Like,
just stay away, mate.
Yeah,
it's not good, and that's what it does. It mucks around with your lungs, and that's what you need. And if you're gonna be an athlete or anything like that, just it's okay to go out and have a drink.
Mm.
It's not going to kill you.
Mm.
But just stay off the smokes, mate. Like, and all the
and
other
even
drugs.
With your drink, pick your times too. Yeah. You got to pick your times, you know.
And if you're in that elite level and you're getting drug tests and things like, just stay away from everything. Make sure you're buying bottled water and just little shit's getting away with it now. I was even scared to take Panadol.
Yeah. Well, there's an Aussie swimmer that just got caught. We don't know the rules. I'm not going to judge anybody because we don't know what's coming out. But she's only young. She's 19. Apparently it's supplements. But you know what?
You just got to be careful.
Unfortunately, we all know drug testing comes around all the time. And is it WADA now or ASADA or VADA? I don't know what it is.
Mate,
there's a list. And everything you put in your fucking mouth, unless it's grown on a tree, you have to fucking check that list. You have to.
So paranoid about it. Same thing, Panadol, you just search everything.
But the thing is, the doctor can put you on this list in there. When you go see your doctor, a red thing will come up on their screen to tell you you're an athlete.
Oh, so they'll give you the right thing if you go to the right doctor the whole time.
What are you going to tell them, mate? Hey, look, I might get drug tested. Put me on this thing so every time you see that doctor, it comes up, a little red thing going on.
Give me something to get rid of the traces of steroid, gets rid of it. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, shit, yeah. As you can tell by the size of me.
Yeah, you've been on steroids for years.
Yeah. And, mate, road rage.
Jacko, any more questions for Brad?
You mentioned how you had to stay in Darwin because you had shin splints. I just wanted to know how you get over. We got a question from one of the boys. Adam Jim is injured at the moment, and he's just gone through a bit and not being like that frustration of not being able to fully train, but still trying to do the recovery. And I think I just wanted to get your perspective on how you coped when being in Darwin, when you weren't with the team and you weren't able to do the things that they were doing. How you got over the injury and overcame that?
It was like, it's frustrating, but that's how it was. And back then, as a 17-year-old, you never used to get injuries. Like you thought you were bulletproof back then. I struggled a bit, only because they couldn't work out a way how to fix it. And then the only way how they got it fixed was the physio used to pinch my skin down my shin, and it freed up the muscle.
Okay.
Yeah, right.
And ever since then, it's been fine. But I think you've got to do the right recovery to make yourself better. You've got to be 100% fit.
Yeah.
Don't get frustrated. Try not to get frustrated. Shit happens. Surround yourself by good people, positive people. But I'm pretty sure there's other stuff we can do in the gym to fix it. But don't try not to beat yourself up about it, because it's only going to get worse.
Yeah,
I think that is an important message. Yeah. Just have good people around you.
Try not to beat yourself up, mate. You'll be back. If it takes 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month, just remember you'll be back.
Yeah,
I've also got another question here that got sent in. How do you sort out friends with agendas and real friends in this sport? Because I think it's like
we did touch on it before.
Yeah, I think that's like going onto who's there in the dressing room.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, after a loss, I think that's pretty much it. You work that out pretty quickly, don't you? When you've had a loss.
Yeah, you do. You know that you should have your closest friends should be in there. And, you know, and then that's how you work out. You'll have close friends in there, or you'll have friends that you thought would be in there and they're not there.
You find out, really. They're out there on the beers before you're gone. And one more from Steve Wohanko, who we had on the show last week. Who was your toughest fight in your career as a pro or an amateur?
Oh,
I think I know it.
Eureka Gamboa.
Yeah.
Gamboa.
He's the hardest man.
Did he lift you?
He lifted me off the floor with an uppercut. We fought in the chemistry cup in fucking Germany, and, mate, he lifted me. Like, the power of that kid. That, mate, just went boom, I sat in the ropes.
Did he have a good rep going into it? Did you know, this is that gun Cuban, or was he just another fucking Cuban who's
mate,
good?
Mate, he used to drop from 60 down to 51.
Wow.
Yeah. Shit. But he was just a ball of muscle.
Yeah. Thing is with the Cubans, though, look, if you won't do it, well, someone else will, so you're out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They've just got that number.
Turnover.
Cuban number 7. Well, when I went to Cuba, La Cruz was number, the Cuban number 2.
Yeah.
Well, the year later, he's a Cuban number 1. He's the world champion. But he was there. He couldn't win a national title at the time.
Yeah,
fucking
amazing. He was definitely the hardest that I've ever been hit by. Well, I remember just sitting on the ropes, just going, "Fuck, I won't last long here."
Looking at Mick Daly, mate, that fucking towel.
Mate, I told him, I said, "Mate, in the ring, I got dropped," and I said, "Mate, bring in me assies. Get these boots off me. I'm going to need me assies."
Yeah, right.
He's running around the bloody ring. But that's how – and he
hard puncher, but slick, hard to hit too.
Mate, I don't think I hit him.
Yeah.
I'd throw shit. It wasn't there. The next thing I was on my ass, and just, how did you do that?
Yeah. Nice. Mate, Brad Hoare, it's been a pleasure as always. One of Australia's sort of, mate, classic boxers, great – you know, great personality, everybody's best mate. It's been a pleasure having him on the show, and Jacko.
Yeah, yeah.
Mate, excellent. Definitely. Thanks, Bradley.
Thanks, cheers, boys.
Good luck in the future. And we will be up next week. See you guys.